This week in Retronauts, we learn to love again. Maybe. I don't know. Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 517 of Retronauts. I am Jeremy Parrish, continuing to be Jeremy Parrish all these mini episodes later. And that means I bring with me my particular tastes in video games. And those don't always line up with the more collective view of what are good and bad video games. And that's what we're going to discuss this week. This is one part group therapy, one part confessional. And at the end of this, I really hope I get a sacramental wafer. That's what I'm very excited about. I'm kind of hungry. So this episode is called Great Games That Never Clicked For Us. And there are four other people here with me. And all of us have put down in a list four different games or series that we've just never managed to connect with. Even though we recognize that objectively those series are good, we don't like playing them. And now we're going to bring that out in the open, not to berate these games or talk about why other people who like them are stupid or bad, but rather to say, hey, I don't get it. And maybe if there are people who do enjoy those games also on this chat, they will say, that's okay, because I can help you learn to love this game. I will help you understand what it takes to get to the meaty core that is inside the horrible exterior shell that you find so repulsive. That's the idea, anyway. We'll see how it actually goes. Anyway, as I mentioned, I'm Jeremy, but also with me, I have many people. So let's cast our line all the way across the Atlantic Ocean to speak to the Retronauts contributor and occasional co-host who lives far away across the Atlantic.
Oh, hello. Yes, I live very far away. I may be a bit vulnerable and shaky in this episode because I think it's going to be a really intense sort of emotional experience. It's going to be quite cleansing. Detoxifying, is that a thing? It is now. Yes, I'm Stuart Jip, by the way. I wasn't sure if that was clear to any of the regular listeners, but it's me, Stuart, your pal.
All right. And then we have a whole bunch of other pals all clustered together in the Bay Area of California. So let's start with our other regular co-host and co-founder-ish type person of Retronauts.
Hey, everybody, it's Bob Mackey. And with this podcast, I'm hoping to bring down our Apple Podcast review average. I think it'll happen.
All you have to do is say nice things about ladies, and that'll get the bad people out to give us downvotes. Speaking of ladies, we have one here on the show. Only the most respectable of ladies, a longtime friend of the show and contributor. Please introduce yourself.
Hey, it's me, the harshly judgmental podcaster, Kat Bailey. I am here to destroy the dreams of everybody who loves games made after the year 2000. So everybody younger than 30 at this point. So look forward to it.
All right. And finally, in the same contiguous physical space as Bob Mackey, we have...
Hey, it's Henry Gilbert, and yes, I hope this episode will dispel the belief that I am just a Nintendo fanboy, because at least two of my choices are classic Nintendo series.
Hot damn. All right. It's getting controversial in here already. So what I have done to set up this episode, this is not, you know, one of those structured episodes where we have a clear mission and everything's going to go down by a rigid list. No, because we have no way of knowing how this episode will turn out. Instead, I have asked everyone to make a tiny list of four games or series that they just don't get or don't enjoy. And we're going to go in a round-robin approach where each of us will list one of these games or series, and everyone else will kind of chime in, and we'll talk about what we don't like, what we do like, et cetera, et cetera. And we'll each take turns and work our way possibly through the entire list. I'm guessing probably not, because I have a feeling some of these conversations are going to blow up. But, you know, at the same time, we can also take this opportunity to talk about video game history, our feelings about video game design, all those cool things that you come to Retronauts for, but in a sort of freeform fashion. So, that is the premise of this episode. And without further ado, I guess we should just jump in. And since I am hosting this episode and put this cockamamie idea together, I'll go first with something that I recognize is a groundbreaking classic, is a multi-million selling series that has lasted for close to 30 years for good reason, because it's very well made and really connects with a lot of people and gives them the video game experience they want, but not me. And that is Resident Evil. And I have played many Resident Evil games through the years. 1, 2, I think I skipped 3, Code Veronica, but 4. I've played like demos and hands-on previews of 5 and 6. And at no point have I ever said, ah, this is it. This is the me game. I love this. And I don't know, maybe it's just because I don't like horror games, because the games themselves have actually changed a lot through the years. I mean, the original Resident Evil, I just found unbelievably clunky. Like, the process of playing that game, not just with the controls, but the interface, the load times, all of it just felt so unappealing, so uninviting, that I couldn't get into it. And Resident Evil 2, I thought, you know, maybe this will change my opinion, because I heard it was so much more refined. It had, you know, multiple protagonists. So I played it and got hung up on a dumpster on the second screen and killed by a zombie within like 3 minutes. And I said, you know what? Maybe this is just not the kind of video game that I should play. And so I haven't really played it. But what am I missing? Like, what's wrong with me? I would love to hear your thoughts. Are there Resident Evil fans here? I feel like there probably are.
Well, I'm not licensed to say what's wrong with you, Jeremy, but I think you don't like horror, and that's what we're talking about, because there are at least 4 different kinds of Resident Evil games. There's the classic style. There is the 4, 5, 6 action game style. There are the RE2 and RE3 remake styles, which is a nice mix between the classic and action. And then we have the first person style. So I think if none of those were appealing to you, you might just not like horror to begin with. And that is what your stumbling block into getting into these games.
Jeremy, can I ask you?
I think that's fair. Like I said, Oh, yes, Stuart.
This might come off a bit condescending. Were you?
What?
No, please. Were you as scared of the zombies, be honest?
No, I just find them not very interesting as enemies. Like, the whole premise of zombies, and Bob's not wrong, like, horror does not generally appeal to me. I'm managing to enjoy the Last of Us TV series, but that's because really it's about people and about not the zombies, but how people interact in a world that is made of mushroom zombies. And that's interesting to me. But, you know, when it comes to video games, you have much more limited verbs in terms of what you can do in that world and, you know, what your relationship to zombies really amounts to, which is run away or kill them with some sort of object or weapon. And I don't know, like, shambling green guys, it just doesn't do it for me.
And Jeremy,
there are definitely moments in Resident Evil games that I've played that I've enjoyed, but like, as soon as the enemies show up, then it stops being an interesting game about, like, hey, let's look around the world and see this place that's been constructed for me to explore. And it becomes like, oh, I have to deal with these guys again. Okay, that's cool.
Jeremy, I just want to say that you're valid and that I am a fellow Resident Evil non-liker, except for Resident Evil 4, a game that I very much enjoyed. I've been always meaning to get around to playing the Resident Evil 2 remake. Back in the day when this series first came out on the PlayStation, I remember somebody saying, this game is really scary. Watch out for the scene with the dogs. And I'm like, I don't want to be scared. I don't want to be like terrified. And so I immediately made a point of not playing that game until Resident Evil 4, strangely, a game that I very much enjoyed. I most recently picked up Resident Evil Village, thinking, well, that very tall vampire lady seems interesting. I would like to know more about her. And what I got was something like the Haunted Mansion. It was a roller coaster. And I think that just was not terribly exciting to me from a game design concept. I didn't want to be on a theme park ride. And so I bounced off it pretty quickly. I have all the respect in the world for Resident Evil, but by and large, horror games, survival horror games, Silent Hill, you name it, I don't play them.
You know, that's funny. I am the, maybe I'm the biggest Resident Evil fan on this, though. Also, I am mostly the fan of what Bob was talking about, the 4 era. And also, I haven't played the 3 remake. I did like the 2 remake a lot. And I think for me, horror games, I do have a limit of like, oh, this is too much horror for me. Like, I'm too scared. But with Resident Evil, especially the action ones, they will scare you, but your main character is presented as like this indestructible action machine. Like, it's basically like a horror movie that like Sylvester Stallone or Schwarzenegger stars in, like Predator, pretty much, you know. So those are the ones I really got into. I didn't give them, they were games I watched friends play because I was like, well, this maybe is too scary to me for also. The tank controls I just could not handle, but it was Resident Evil 4 and the remake. Also, it was probably I gave them a new chance because I really wanted the GameCube to succeed. And like, well, if these are the biggest games on the GameCube, I'm going to give them a shot. And that's when they finally clicked with me.
So I will say that I haven't played all of the Silent Hill games, but what I've played, I've really enjoyed, even though it's horror. But those I find genuinely unsettling. Like, there is something about Silent Hill that just really, really creeps me out in a way that Resident Evil has never managed. Like, Resident Evil is Hollywood blockbuster horror, as opposed to, like, creepy indie horror. Like, Silent Hill has the same feel as that one Twin Peaks episode that's just, like, imagery and noise and just, like, is an assault on the senses. And that's interesting. That series I tend not to play because it actually is really intense. But Resident Evil, yeah, I can't connect with it. But that is not me saying Resident Evil is bad in any way, just that it's just never quite worked for me. But assuming that I don't like the PlayStation style of Resident Evil, Resident Evil 4 didn't really do much for me. And the more like modern action roller coaster style of like Resident Evil 6 also doesn't do it for me. Is there some kind of Resident Evil out there that I might be able to connect with, like speaking as a fan?
The light gun games.
Maybe the Game Boy Color one?
Yeah, the light gun games. That's a good one from Cap there, yeah.
Okay.
Pull up your Wii and set those up.
The RE4 remake is coming out, I think, in March or April. So it's the best game in the series, and I'm sure it'll be a fine remake, so perhaps that's where you need to jump in. I mean, 4 is still very good, but as advanced as it is, it still has very mechanical and modular controls of that era. So that might be hard to get over if you're jumping into it as a new player.
All right. So Resident Evil Gaiden is what you said. Which one are the light gun games? Survivor?
I think Umbrella Chronicles. Is that what it was called?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's
Umbrella Chronicles and the Dark Side Chronicles.
That was the thing, is that I always liked the Resident Evil lore more than I have liked the actual games. Having said that, I don't enjoy games in which people transform into horrifying mutants, which is a Resident Evil thing, because I don't like body horror, and that's just a personal taste. So I enjoy the Resident Evil lore and everything to do with the Umbrella Chronicles and everything that followed and such, but the actual transforming into grotesque mutants, I can take it or leave it.
You know, right. with the 7 and 8, in the first person stuff with it, that is kind of where I was starting to hit a line of like, oh, wait, now it's getting more into... I played about 3-4 hours of both of them and the demos, but it was too much for me because like, especially 7 with its like chainsaw massacre, like barfy, grimy house, as like, blech. And then the demo for 8 is you're in like a filth-ridden prison, and it's just like, man, this is... I don't know. That's the point of it, but I prefer... Obviously, Resident Evil 4 is full of grimy, gross, bloody things, but I don't know. It never... The whole time, like, Leon has a cool jacket or coat, and just like he's kind of untouchable by the grime and muck around him.
Yeah, 7, of course, I mean, it was designed for VR, so there's a lot of you personally kind of in first person doing gross stuff, like putting your hand in that body cavity or crawling through the sort of centipede corridor and things like that. It's gross.
eating the gross food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sorry, being force-fed the gross food.
Yeah, yeah.
Yum.
I mean, I'll give it a chance. I haven't tried it. It might be just look gross. It might be good. I don't know.
Yes, we shouldn't judge what
okay,
the culture
so I'm making a note of those two games and the Resident Evil 4 remake. The one final thing I will say is that I have played a fair amount of The Evil Within, and actually really connected with that one. Is there a Resident Evil game that you would say, like, oh, this is the most like The Evil Within?
Oh, I would say play Evil Within 2. It was super overlooked, and it's so much better than the first Evil Within. A game I thought was very uneven, but still worth playing. Evil Within 2 is so, so good.
I love both of those games so much. Like, they're just so mad. Like, just just the logic is just completely bonkers. It's just whatever would be the coolest thing that would happen next is what always happens. It's so cool.
I'm also okay with enabling you, Jeremy, and saying, if you don't like horror, it's okay. You don't have to engage with it. You don't have to force yourself to engage with it. I like wholesome things, like hearing about the Centipede Corridor. I'm like, no, I would like a nice, relaxing and cozy game, actually, as opposed to the horror game.
You don't have to go in the Centipede Corridor. Nobody has to go in the Centipede Corridor.
You don't have to force yourself to go down the Centipede Corridor.
Jeremy, could I recommend Gregory Horror Show as a sort of alternative to you?
Okay. I'll look into that one. Cartoon horror. Maybe like a Gegege no Kitaro game.
Ooh, I like that.
Luigi's Mansion. Luigi's Mansion.
Oh, yes,
yeah. Luigi's Mansion.
Love those. Those are good. Okay, so basically don't play Resident Evil. Play Evil Within and Luigi's Mansion. Done. All right, so that's enough of my personal hangups here. We're not even going to get into my dislike of Westerns and vampire stuff, Castlevania not accepted, or notwithstanding. Let's move along to Bob, and the first game on your list. Tell us, what is this thing that you dislike? Why? And do you have an interest in getting into it, or can we just all piss off?
Well, I've spent almost an entire lifetime trying to get into this game, so I think it might be a lost cause. But the game is Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link. And my own theory about why people like this is because a generation of gamers were gaslit by chip shortages. That's why they like this game. Because I can see the virtues of this game. I understand it's a well-crafted game, but it is not what I want from a Zelda game. And I feel like there's a reason why the series did not go in this direction. Ultimately, to put it in very broad terms, I find this game to be far too punishing when I really enjoy the freedom of a Zelda game. Even the most linear ones allow you to explore a bit. But I feel like this one, it's always like smacking your hand for straying too far or for not performing well enough. And I feel like it's hard for me personally to get over the initial difficulty spike in when it comes to fighting enemies, especially the knights and things like that. And I know there's a lot I'm missing in this game, and it's a Zelda game, one of the very, very few I haven't finished. Maybe I think this and Spirit Tracks are the only two I haven't finished. So, yeah, but this game, again, I like the atmosphere. I like the music on the Famicom. I like that version of the music. I like the sprite work, but playing the game has always been very punishing, unrewarding, and the last thing I want from a Zelda game is what this game is doing. And that's my case, at least.
That's perfectly fair.
You know, this was one that I actually, for Zelda, it was a slow warm-up for me, too, based on my age. Like, I played the first Zelda just too young, and I thought, like, well, this game doesn't make any sense. I'm not moving to the right and completing it. And then I play Zelda 2, and it confuses me even more. If I hadn't played Link's Awakening when I was like, well, I guess I should play something on the Game Boy that I haven't played before, that was when I finally gave Zelda a chance, and I felt mature enough to do it. But I could still never go back to Zelda 2. Zelda 2 feels like It's like they had a perfectly good setup with the original Zelda, and then instead they decided, like, let's make, like, a crappier Dragon Quest, pretty much. Like, it just felt... The overworld thing, really, it sucks to me, honestly.
I mean, I don't enjoy the overworld in this game.
I'd say it's more Dragon Buster than Dragon Quest, but definitely some dragons in there. Yeah, I mean, I recently replayed this all the way through, or at least up to the final dungeon, which is just too labyrinthine and difficult for me to deal with in my old age. I beat it as a kid. That's all I need to do. But I can definitely see the flaws in this game at this point. Like, the lives system is so counter to everything that is Zelda, the checkpointing where you run out of lives and you get sent way back to the beginning of the game. The leveling system is a little awkward. It doesn't have magic spells. It doesn't have tools to speak of. I mean, it does have magic spells, but not tools to speak of. Sorry. It just feels a little off. And, you know, it was a very experimental period for Nintendo. And I feel like this is a game that really deserves a proper remake. Like, do a remake, like a full-on remake of this game. But maybe they don't need to, because a lot of the ideas they were exploring, like the sort of rhythms of combat, like, they did that so much better with Ocarina of Time, and especially the Wind Waker. Like, that's where they really said, oh, all these kind of raw materials that we were kicking around with Zelda 2, like, here's the full realization of them. And, you know, it's really putting some meaning into combat. And I actually, as someone who likes this game and has played it many times, I don't know that you necessarily need to like or play through Zelda 2 to enjoy the Zelda series. It's very much a product of its time.
I feel like, to some extent, it's one of those games that I think is more loved for being unusual, for not being like the other Zelda games, than it is for its own merits. Not that it doesn't have merits. I just, I feel like most of the time when you see this game getting sort of lauded for any reason, it's usually with the addendum, like, actually, I actually like Zelda 2, as opposed to just a full-hearted, I like Zelda 2. You know, it's a kind of a, not contrarian, but it's a game that necessarily stands apart from all the others, so you always have to qualify it in some way, I feel.
It's a real Final Fantasy II of its own distinct series.
Yeah.
Or even like a Mega Man Legends thing, where if it were disconnected from that franchise, people would probably like it a lot more, or at least be willing to take it on its own terms. But yeah, like, it fits awkwardly in the series. And sometimes, you know, Nintendo doing that in the 8-bit era worked out well, like Mario 2. I love the American Mario 2. So good. Yeah. But Zelda 2, I don't think has aged that well.
Yes, also someone who likes organization, I hate that it's the only Zelda game to start with a Z. Instead of The Legend of Zelda, colon, something or other, it's Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link. So like, the part of my brain that likes organization in cleanliness, it just upsets it completely, and that's hard to get over too.
There are two
things.
Well,
you can file it under Link Noboken, and that way you can stick it next to Legend of Zelda on your shelf.
That is better. That is better.
Yeah. There are two things I don't like about The Adventures of Link. One is, I don't like the overworld aspect of it. I find it very jarring compared to the rest of the game. And then the other thing I don't like about it is that when I watch it, and I watch it somewhat frequently on streams and whatnot, it is monotonous to look at, I think. And the music is also monotonous in a way that, I mean, it's good. Don't get me wrong. I really enjoy listening to the remixes, especially in Smash Brothers. But in the game itself, there comes a point where I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm done with this. So Shadow Link is cool, though.
You know, child me bounced off it as well from a game rental, because, you know, I feel very lost at the start of it. And then when you die, this, like, it's one of the, like, meanest game over screens you can see on the NES. That's just, like, rubbing your face in it, like, you suck. It's blood red. Ganon's back. You're screwed. Get out of here. Like,
I mean, if you read the manual,
Mike Tyson is laughing at you.
if you read the manual, that is Link's blood. It's not just blood red. It is literally your protagonist's blood splashed across the screen to resurrect Ganon. So, kind of dark.
Mm.
All right. So I guess what we're here to say, Bob, is it's okay to be you. Don't feel bad about it.
That's right.
It's a good game, but also a very dated game. And they've done all those things better.
Well, out of all the remakes, they've never remade this one. Like, they've remade so many things, they never touched this.
It was a evolutionary dead end, right? I mean, Link to the Past came out afterward, and it returned to the top-down view and also greatly refined what was present in the original game, and that's where the rest of the series sprung from.
But I mean, when they brought the camera down from the overhead view for the 3D games and put it behind Link's back, I really feel that's where they were like, oh, that's what we were trying to do, like putting you more in the action, making swordplay important. That's what I was talking about with like Wind Waker and that sort of thing. Like that's, I don't feel it's an evolutionary dead end. It's just it had to evolve a lot to be you know, into 3D to be valid.
And it's a real tenuous connection, but there are 2D sections in obviously Link's Awakening, but they use the exact same like controls, engine, etc. So they're not really the same.
If you're interested in experiencing a game in this style that's not nearly as punishing as Zelda 2, I would recommend Adventure Time, Hey Ice King, Why'd You Steal Our Garbage for DS. And I think it was also on 3DS.
It was, yeah.
It's just a straight up, like just a pure Zelda 2 clone, but it's way lighter weight. It doesn't have the punishing elements at all. I mean, if you don't like Adventure Time, then it's not going to do anything for you. But, you know, if you're okay with that series and that world, then I think it's a really, really good example of what Zelda 2 can be if you kind of lower the threshold to entry and make it less punishing.
Bob, okay. If you want to like Adventure of Link more, can I recommend playing Axe Battler on the Game Gear? Because it's like a ripoff of Zelda 2 that's exponentially worse in every respect.
Play a worse game, Bob.
I will say, probably, I have not investigated this, but out there has to be some ROM hack that makes this a much more playable, and I guess for lack of a better word, a more modern experience in terms of what you would expect from a game like this. And by that I mean not sending you back to the beginning of the game when you die.
Yeah,
you don't even need a ROM hack for that. When I recorded video for this game, I said, you know, I'm too old and have too much going on in my life, too many other real responsibilities to deal with the lives system. So I just put on a Game Genie code that gave me infinite lives. And it doesn't make the game like a complete breeze, but it takes away that one punishing element of sending you back to the very start if you run out of three lives, which is very difficult not to do. And that's actually a literal game changer. Like, it makes it much more approachable without just totally neutering it.
Yeah.
I'll hack my own ROMs then.
There you go.
Novel idea.
So that was Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link. Now we move along to Kat to court controversy in her own way.
I don't know if this is controversial because the series, I think, has fallen out of favor a little bit. But I'm sure plenty of people would come back and be like, what are you talking about? But I don't care for the Halo series and never have, going back to the original Halo or Halo 2. I respect it for redefining first-person shooters on consoles, and the way that Bungie introduced in terms of the way guns were handled and the vehicles and whatnot were quite monumental. But I don't care for the story or the lore or the aesthetic. I don't like the Master Chief. I don't like Cortana. I once reviewed Halo 4 for some reason. Don't know why I did that. I think I was just in the need for money. And to me, it inaugurated a kind of a new era on console, one that I think kind of reflected the shift from more arcade-based games, I should say, to more PC-based games. And Bungie was in many ways on the forefront of that. But I am not much of a first-person shooter person anyway. I like Battlefield. I tried to play Halo in college, because Halo was a thing when I was in college, and people would be networking Xboxes and whatnot, and I was extremely bad at it. I didn't understand the twin stick shooter thing. I just died a lot. People would run up to me and be like, bam, with their elbow, and just knock me off. It represents a strain of first-person shooter that I don't really like, which is the super, I'm jumping around, I'm getting sniped from across the map. Less considered, I should say. I've always preferred the Battlefield series to the Halo series. And just by and large, it has never resonated with me at all. But there are people who are like, I love this series. I've met people who are like, Halo changed my life. It got me back into video games and got me into the video game industry. I've met people who are like, I've put thousands of hours into Halo multiplayer. And I'm like, you do you. I don't understand. Jeremy, I remember you saying, Kat, would you like to come on a Halo podcast or Retronauts once? And I said, I'm not a good candidate. I don't care for Halo. And you were like, really? That's surprising, because I know that you liked
Halo. I thought we co-reviewed Master Chief Collection.
We did. Surprise.
You lied. Okay, no, I just assumed, based on that you were like, yeah, Halo. Yeah, cool.
Sure, Halo, whatever.
If I was a gamer on Twitter right now, I'd be so mad.
Oh, my God. Review we did 10 years ago or whatever.
I do agree with you. I think for a lot of games like Halo and a lot of games that I personally like, there is a sort of you had to be there appeal to it, where if you try to play it now, you don't really see what the big deal was. And I played through a lot of these games for the first time a few years ago. Some friends and I played through most of the Master Chief Collection, and I thought, this was a pleasant couple of hours I spent, but I didn't understand like why this was a world-changing game series. And I still don't understand why there are books and why there's a TV show. That's some sicko stuff. I don't want to get into that.
Nobody watches that show, no. though.
There are some people who, they want to know what the Master Chief's up to, you know?
We know the suit sucks him off, and that's all we need to know. And he can pee in it. But yeah, I'm on board with you, Kat. I don't find it that appealing. I think it's kind of ugly, and I find the lore embarrassing, what little I hear of it in the actual game.
I think mentally, I connect it with the Xbox's initial branding in the early 2000s, which was the very bro-heavy, very do-the-do kind of aspect. I mean, Master Chief was literally on Mountain Dew bottles in the mid-2000s. And I found
that... His armor's the color of Mountain Dew.
I found that very alienating at the time. And so, regardless of the game's own merits, I just naturally kind of kept it at arm's length, I think. Even though, like, many of my friends were huge fans of the series, it would occasionally drag me in and I'd be like, all right, I'll sit on the turret of the Warthog, I guess, sure.
I played the original trilogy quite a lot, but it was because my GoldenEye Perfect Dark friends, as we were entering, as we were leaving high school age, they're like, well, hey, this is the next four players on a screen, on one screen shooter. And obviously, for Retronauts listeners who want to say, like, God, you're a lame-o who didn't play, like, you know, you weren't playing Unreal or Doom or whatever on a computer. No, I wasn't. I was playing first-person shooters to me for the longest time where it's four players on a screen, four screens on one screen. Mm. And Halo filled that niche for me very well, for especially 1 and 2. And then when I got online, I played it a bit less, but the lore has always, yes, it's stupid to me. Like, I half played the story elements of them, and, like, I don't know, the space war zombie, like the giant thing, the Audrey 2 in the move, basically in it, is very, like, ridiculous to me. And then on top of that, it was so weird, the timing of it getting so popular, like right after 9/11, because the story of space marines murdering religious extremists, I pretty soon when I was playing, I was like, well, thematically, this feels wrong right now.
I will say, to their credit, Bungie, I don't think had that as an intention. And with Halo 2, they really tried to walk it back by basically saying, hey, this character who is a representative of the alien race that you could very easily see as space Muslims, he is like an on par as a playable protagonist with Master Chief, and you don't have a choice about this. Like, they put you into that character. So I feel like there was an effort to mitigate some of the, I assume, unintended imagery there. So, you know, I'm okay with that. Like, I feel like they...
Look, Halo's not as American fascist as Call of Duty, all up, for sure. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
No, you're going to have to back that up, Henry, with some evidence. Like, oh, sorry, that's a stupid comment.
I don't think it was intentional commentary. It couldn't have been based on the release date, but I feel like it does explain why it appealed to the cultural moment.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, those vehicles never clicked with you, Kat? All the fun vehicles?
The vehicles? Not really, because driving the Warthog was terrible, and I would like flip it all the time. I always thought everybody really loved the final sequence where you're escaping the actual ring in the Warthog. I found that obnoxious, actually, because driving the thing was impossible. Flying around in the spaceship was fun. But that's the thing, is like, I like the Battlefield series much more so. And I never seemed to be able to actually get into the vehicles to be able to go around and do things. More often than not, I would hear beep, 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 and then I would turn around and be like, bwah! And then I would be dead, and that would be that. So,
For Halo, for me, I mean, I came to Halo quite late, and for me, a lot of the appeal, and that appeal is now gone because they've stopped doing it. But that's five straight first-person shooters you can play in split screen with a friend. Not the online element. I mean, that's great, but that's not for me. But the fact I can sit there and play Halo 1, 2, 3, ODST, Reach, and 4 with a pal, that went a long way for me. But with Halo, as much as I like it, I totally understand not liking it, because that game is kind of weird with this level design and big, big open spaces that sometimes you'll be trekking across really similar looking terrain for a really, really long time, only to die and have to do it again. So that's, I do get it.
Yeah, as someone who has really enjoyed the Halo series, my interest was kind of baked into it by being an existing fan of Bungie shooters before that. I think to really understand its appeal, you have to, I mean, Bob has it right. Like, it was very much of the moment. The thing about Halo in 2001 is that, yes, it wasn't as deep or as complex or as good as a lot of PC-based first-person shooters, but the PC market at that point was still very niche. It was very much for the hardest of hardcore, and people were playing on consoles. And this, along with, you know, GoldenEye, these were the games that really brought that genre to the console market. And the big thing about Halo was that, you know, it was just bigger and more exciting and had more variety and multiplayer. It had all the vehicles and everything, and allowed people to have that multiplayer connected experience that really only existed on PCs on an Xbox, either with split screen or with a LAN party where you hooked up multiple systems. And it just made it accessible and affordable in a way that something like Unreal had not been. And that really counted for a lot. There was a hunger, I think, for the style of game, you know, like almost a decade after Doom and after Quake and Half-Life, you know, you had this huge console market that was just ready for this experience. And that happened with the launch of the Xbox, and they gravitated toward it. And it was a huge big deal. The story is kind of, I don't know, it's fine, but going too deeply into it with novels, don't recommend it. And it's not really that well told in the game, especially once they started saying, hey, there's all these ways to sell novels and stuff. So the games don't explain the story that well. You have to read the novels and the comics and all the spinoff stuff.
Or you can watch the Halo TV series, in which the Master Chief is revealed to, well, he has intercourse. So, but they're still better than the Gears of War novels.
I don't see how they could possibly be better than those novels. What are those novels, Eve? What is the prose in those novels? What could it possibly be? I don't understand.
Hey.
Dom crouched behind a small pill box. Sweat poured down his brow as he reloaded his lance with perfect timing to get extra power for the first few bullets.
They'd have to reload on every
page. Well, he's going to be spending time thinking about his wife.
He shouted, it's a grub hole. I don't know. I love those games, but I ain't reading no books of no Gears of War.
some contract writer was making, just trying to make some paycheck. And to you, contract writer, I salute you.
Yeah. It was either that or more erotica.
Well, combine them both into the finest book, yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, Halo. If you didn't like it in 2001, you're probably not going to like it in 2023.
Yeah, because it's much worse now.
And then they laid everybody off.
Yeah. No, Bob, they put out a press release. They didn't do that.
They all went to live on a farm. I read the press release. Yeah. They're all very happy now.
Well, if you want to get into Halo now, may I guide you to Destiny 2?
No. Now, that's what my husband did. Also, I'll say that when Halo Infinite came out, I was like, I'm going to give Halo another shot. And then my husband's like, no, just play Destiny 2, because he's one of those guys who was like, F those 343 games. I'm following these guys to Destiny.
Destiny's fun.
Jeremy, I have a game to add to my list.
Destiny?
Yes, that's the game. Destiny. Nah.
Which list is that?
We're not going to make it through the whole list this episode.
Alas.
We might make it to our second games. I don't know.
I think we'll each get two games in this conversation.
In the interest of expediency, why don't we jump ahead to Stuart, and you can just make everyone angry.
Oh, okay. That's what you do. Cool. Is it? Oh, man. I just want to make everyone happy, but I keep failing. My first pick is Super Mario 64, which is a game I've never really understood where the fun is. I do respect what it did, but even when it first came out, when I was very small, I remember thinking, how is this like Mario? This is like, you go from this simple obstacle course kind of setup with lots of scope for exploration and secrets within this 2D world with run, jump, and, you know, maybe spin jump, and all the variables kind of come off of the power ups. And then they make it into this, ordeal of complete 3D movement, where getting to the end of the level means nothing. You have to find items within level, which you then get kicked out of, and have to go into the level again to retrace essentially the same steps up to 7 times. The levels are, they just seem so empty to me compared to Mario stages, where you'd get like, I don't know, like 100 levels, each of which is going to have this little kind of bespoke challenge that's been crafted and secrets you're going to miss. And they just pack so much into these small spaces. But then you've got these, I don't even know. Like, I can think about something like Bob on Battlefield compared to, like, say, the first level of Mario 3 even. And there's just no comparison. It's like, okay, now here's what we're doing. Mario is now punching things, except if you jump and then press the punch button, depending what speed you're moving, you might find yourself flying forwards. You might find yourself just hovering in the air for a second, doing like a weird kick. And I'm looking down at this controller, and I have no problem with the N64 controller, but I'm just kind of like, at the time, what's happening here? And to this day, I just, no matter how many times they port this game, and no matter which control scheme they let me play it on, I just can't enjoy myself. I felt like it took Mario Galaxy to give me that Mario feel in 3D again, despite the fact, weirdly enough, that it does retain all these moves, but it repurposes them into more linear stages again. And I kind of guess that is what Mario was to me, and it still is. I just don't really want to walk around and like race things and talk to people and collect these stars and keep getting booted out of the level into the castle. It's kind of anti-Mario to me. It's so complex compared to what came before. I mean, I think the only time I've actually finished this game, and it was the bare minimum number of stars, I did it on the DS version of all things, which I started out doing with like a thumb pad thing, and then I lost it, so I had to finish it with the stylus, and that wasn't exactly an ideal way to experience Super Mario, but I'm not blaming the game for that, really. I don't know, it's just, I've never got it. Whenever, anytime anyone tells me it holds up, I just kind of can't even begin to imagine how someone could think that compared to everything that came after. It feels like such a I don't know. It just feels almost like a demo. Like, here's what Mario, here's 3D Mario. We know it sucks, but it's going to be good someday, I promise. And then you get through the whole GameCube era with it not being good. And then you finally reach the Mario Galaxy and you're like, okay, here we go. Now the visuals have caught up. The game feel has caught up. We're good. This is great. But not Mario 64. It's just, it doesn't work for me. It's so ugly. It's so confusing. It's so difficult compared to almost every other Mario game. It's just, you know, I get that it was revolutionary and I do get it why people like it. I do kind of like the Bowser stages because they're a lot more like traditional Mario levels, like front to back. If the whole game was like that, I would probably enjoy it. And there's probably a ROM hack somewhere that is like that, that I would probably enjoy. But not the main game. No way. Too hard, too frustrating. And Mario keeps making stupid noises and I wish it would stop.
But I bet you like the GBA games.
I do, because they're basically the games already liked with stupid noises added.
I didn't like Mario 64 when I first played it because I didn't really understand maneuvering in a 3D space in a platformer context. And people were like, isn't this the most incredible thing you've ever played? And I was like, well, I'm having a hard time making this jump because the camera is kind of weird. And
yeah, I didn't even mention the camera, but that was a huge thing as well. Yeah.
Over the years, I've developed more and more respect, I think, for Mario 64, and I've come to really enjoy it. I think that my favorite way to play it is actually on the original Nintendo 64, on a CRT, because it looks a little weird when I play it on Nintendo Switch and whatnot. But for a first-time outing on this platform, they did so much to codify how we would understand not just 3D platformers, but maneuvering in 3D space in general. I love the... Oh, please forgive me for using this word. I love the verticality of the levels that you start at the top and then go all the way down, or you start at on the bottom and you go all the way up. There are these kind of interesting layer cake levels that are packed with secrets. I think that the technical limitations of the Nintendo 64 and what they can actually create really focuses the design in many respects. And it's still very fun to play, I think. I think that it is maybe my favorite 3D Mario this side of Odyssey. So,
Yeah, Kat, I agree. I think it's still fun to play. During the pandemic, that collection came out that was weirdly available for a limited time, even though it wasn't very good. And jumping back into it, it just was so immediate. Like, just a character that easy to control in 1996 with so many moves and so many ways to maneuver him was just revolutionary, and it still feels great to control Mario. But I agree with Stuart in that the open world idea, open world for this era, was not a great idea for Mario, and I'm not a big fan of the level design, and I don't think they figured out open world Mario until Odyssey. And their solution there was like lots of little challenges instead of start the level from the beginning every time and find the challenge. I think that was their solution and it worked well. But Zelda Ocarina of Time was developed concurrently with this game, and I think they figured out 3D movement a bit better, even though you couldn't jump. I feel like the denser spaces worked well with the limitations of the N64. Having smaller rooms and dungeons to explore was more fun than just a giant world of like 30 polygons in front of you. I feel like the scope was important to impress people, but it ended up being executed better in a different game in an arguably different genre than Mario 64.
Yeah, I mean, Ocarina of Time benefited from 2 years of real-world playtesting, trial and error, user feedback, and so forth. So
yeah,
this is definitely, like, Mario 64 is definitely building blocks, and I do find it a little hard to get back to. When I went back and made a video on it, I didn't feel compelled to play it all the way through this time. And I really loved it in 1996. I was blown away by it, but there was nothing else like it in the world, really. I mean, there were some 3D action games, but all of those were just dreadful, just not fun to play and not fun to control. And Mario 64, it just felt fluid and responsive. And I didn't know enough about 3D video gaming, because no one had figured it out yet, that I hated the camera the way that I should have. So I even put up with that. And they did at least try to make the camera diegetic by saying, no, it's actually Lucky Two. He's out here floating around. And that's
why I got to give him props for that. That's
the camera
cool.
sucks because, yeah.
You look in the mirror and he's behind you.
Because he's a stupid turtle with a camera. Yeah. And he's.
So cool.
Now, so there were lots of good ideas and they kind of recognized some of the failings. Sorry, Henry, go ahead.
No, I agree with a lot of that too. I love the game when it first came out. I mean, I got an N64 day one and because I was like, Mom, Christmas and birthday together. Like, this is the big one, please. I got to get this because the Mario 64 just looks so cool. I'd never seen anything like it. Like, I'd played 3D platformers like Tomb Raider at the time. I was like, man, it's just too confusing to me. I could not handle navigation. And I did love the playground of it back then. But yes, today going back to it, it is a little harder because I think Mario 64 way better than Mario Sunshine. But after that, like with Galaxy, I think they finally figured out a more focused, directed level design in a 3D space. And then on top of that, like Bob said, Mario Odyssey really you can't go back to 64 after Odyssey almost. It's because it's everything that Mario 64 wanted to be and strive to be. And then also, I really love 3D Land and 3D World games because.
Hell yeah.
They're the opposite of this. They finally built in a 3D space levels that feel like they were made for Super Mario Brothers 3. That's what I love about them. And also Bowser's Fury, I think, really handles a 3D playground of challenges excellently. But I do have warm, fuzzy memories of Mario 64, though also I feel like costume-wise, I wish there were better costumes in it too, instead of just like a wing hat or turning into T-1000 because that was really impressive at the time to have a reflective metal body.
It looked cool. I find it interesting that I'm kind of in the minority here, but I guess I'm not surprised. I love the vibes of Mario 64. I enjoy jumping into the paintings. I love a lot of the music, especially when you're in Bowser's castle, I suppose.
Oh yeah, I love that tune. I mean, the music, I can't really fault the music, you know, to be honest. The visuals are about as good as they could ever have been at that time, I think. It's a game, like I say, it's a game I do respect. I really do understand why people like it. For me, I just bounce off of it. 3D Land and 3D World are kind of what I wanted coming from having played Mario 1, 2, and 3. I just wanted it to feel like a Mario game, and for me, it just didn't. It just felt like something else that they were telling me was a Mario game. And it just, I don't know. I'm going to end up repeating myself if I keep going on about it. So, yeah, you get where I'm coming from. But I do respect the game for its achievements and, the sheer amount of content. I mean, for a first 3D platformer such as it is, it's insane how much stuff there is in that game. Even just like raw number of stages, there's what, how many courses? Like at least 15. And they're big.
Yeah, it's like 15 or 16.
Yeah. But for me, when I pick up something like Crash Bandicoot, I'd be like, this is more what I was hoping for, a linear thing which had some 3D kind of interaction.
Yeah, so what you're saying is you wanted more of that 2D Mario vibe, but in a 3D space. Whereas
I wanted it to test the same kind of skills, you know, as the other Mario games did. I don't think that 3D Mario 64 tests those same skills. For obvious reasons, you know, it's not a 2D game, but Mario 3D Land kind of feels to me like a 2D game that just happens to be 3D. It has the linear obstacle course thing, and that's kind of what I got from games like Crash Bandicoot, which I don't think is as good as Mario 64. I just like it a lot more.
Yeah, I think Nintendo maybe rightly went in with this idea of like, let us reimagine Mario now that it is in a 3D space, because it was a time in which every 8-bit, 16-bit series was trying to figure out what it was going to look like in a 3D space. And some were successful and some were very not successful, as we know. And the ones that weren't successful were the ones that didn't continue. And so Nintendo, instead of drilling down on the precision platforming aspect of it, drilled down much more on the secrets and the exploration of the original NES games. And yes, I agree. It is a very different flavor. And if I'm speaking personally from my personal standpoint, I kind of agree with you, Stuart. Like, Mario 3 is my favorite. Mario, that's the one that I enjoy playing. I enjoy the precision platforming, but as a certain flavor of Mario, Mario 64, to me, interestingly enough, I find it much more enjoyable to go back to than Mario Galaxy or Mario Sunshine or a game like that.
It interests me that with Nintendo, when they took their franchises from 2D to 3D, they correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm racking my brain here, but they kind of didn't really miss. Like, if they didn't do it, it's because they hadn't got a good idea yet. Like, which is why, I guess, when Metroid Prime came around, it was so much later, and that was pretty much a slam dunk. F-Zero GX and X was the slam dunk. Zelda, Mario, they just didn't really miss when it came to doing that. But then Sonic came along, and it still hasn't got it right.
Nope.
I hear Frontier is amazing.
Nope, it sucks.
Yeah,
sorry,
one thing. So there is supposed to be like an element of us saying, here's our recommendation on loving this game that you dislike, and you know, obviously, we're probably not going to change your mind, but I would like to suggest, just kind of like Kat mentioned, the game has great vibes. It has atmosphere that no other Mario game has, especially some of the caverns and some of the stages like that, where, you know, like the Nessie or whatever the creature is called is floating around. Like, sometimes you just kind of stop and drink everything in. And that's like, that's an experience that I don't really see in other Mario games. They tend to be much more like go, 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 which, you know, that's kind of the Mario thing. It's from an arcade lineage. But I like the way this game is more about like, hey, drink in the atmosphere. And also, streamers have done an amazing job of just turning Mario 64 into an incredible playground of idiotic things you can do.
Snapping it over their knee, basically, yeah.
Well, yeah, like, just, you know, see what kind of ridiculous things you can do in this game. There's some appeal there. But again, maybe that's not your thing, and that's totally fine.
I was thinking of trying, I think there's been a native PC port now of this game, and I think that they may have, in fact, just straight up added, like, a more traditional Mario Odyssey-style camera control, which would be very fundamentally different, but it might be enough to get me back on board with it. I don't know. So maybe I'll give that a try.
Stuart,
yeah.
If you want to enjoy Mario 64 when you're playing it, just think to yourself, I could be playing Sonic Adventure instead. That scenario.
Okay, that's a misfire, because I actually do like Sonic Adventure. But however, the reason I like it is because it's a hot mess.
I guess there's more to laugh at.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm just an enigmatic man. You just never know.
You are. You're wrapped in a mystery, like a burrito full of unknown elements. Anyway, we should move along to Henry, who hasn't had a chance to share his lamentations yet, and we're almost an hour into the show. My God.
Oh, my goodness.
Four games apiece was optimistic.
So my one is Metroid. That's the big one for me. You offered this up as my potential pick, I was like, yeah, the Metroid has never clicked with me. Let me just say, like, yes, I understand. The funny thing is, I like other things that take from Metroid. Like, I enjoyed Symphony of the Night a good deal. I even in like the Batman Arkham games, like, they have Metroid elements to them, and they even made their own Metroid game for the Vita, which I actually liked. I didn't love. I liked it. I'm getting the head shakes.
Now
here.
I know how it feels.
Yeah, see?
Well, I think the issue here, Henry, is that Metroid is starring a woman.
Yeah.
And you need to examine your biases.
No, but, okay.
I thought she was a robot.
When I first played Metroid, yes, it was kind of like, it's why I wanted to mention Zelda up front when Bob picked Zelda 2, because I had a childlike bounce off it of not understanding it, of like, you know, the map, mapping it out, the password system. It just seemed so hard and hard to capture. And then the Metroid 2, same deal. Like, it just, I would get lost, or I would just feel like, also getting Metroided, of losing all the abilities, taking it away, like that did frustrate me. Even though then, like, cut to 5 years later, I'm at a sleepover with a friend and they're like, okay, Super Metroid, you never played this? Like, come on, let's play it. And I started up and it's like, yeah, it is good. I can see the reason it's good, but I still, maybe it is like the spareness of it and just how cut back it is and how little explaining of the world there is, or the abilities. Like, I don't get hooked as much story wise. The gameplay, I know why it's great and I can objectively see that, but its style of gameplay, like Twitch Plays, isn't as much for me. I feel more punished by mistakes in Metroid as well than I do in other classic Nintendo series that I enjoy, like Mario and Zelda. And lastly, I will say too that it's interesting, in my preamble here, it is interesting that we're doing this right after Metroid Prime came out, because because I did want to give that another shot, because the Prime games also, again, I was like, yeah, I get these, but I, control-wise, I actually was too into Halo at the time. I was like, yeah, this isn't like Halo. Yeah. This needs to be, like, faster, peppier, pick it up here, guys. Like, that's how I felt with Prime. Now I download a remaster. I did the intro area, like the first hour or whatever, until, you know, you then start in the real planet, I'm assuming. And I was like, oh, okay, I finally, now in remaster, I can use a second stick, and I'm using the updated controls in it. But
yeah,
again, it's just, it's clicking me, like, yes, I see why people love it, but this is just me doing that scene from Family Guy that's become a meme now, of where Peter Griffin says he does not understand The Godfather, and everybody's like, what's not to get? What's not to get?
But it insists upon itself.
Yeah, I was going to say, yes. Metroid insists upon itself.
It does insist upon itself, honestly. Like, it's insistent.
Well, you brought up that double stick thing in the remaster. There was this weird discourse in the early aughts where a lot of people that were very defensive about Metroid Prime said, it's not a first-person shooter, it's a first-person adventure. Because they were trying to find a way to excuse the fact that you couldn't use the C-stick as, yes, like, a second controller.
C-stick's right there.
Yeah.
The C-stick's right there. Yeah. Use it for it.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that I played Timesplitters before I played Metroid Prime doomed Metroid Prime for me until, you know, the Wii version came along, which I actually liked quite a lot.
Very good point. I played a shitload of Time Splitters on GameCube before it. Yeah,
I mean, the Metroid series is quite easy. Not that I'm accusing you of going for an easy route here, Henry. It's quite easy to be controversial about. You know, like if your favorite is one of about four different games, you're going to get shouted at. I mean, my favorite's probably Fusion, and that's gotten me shouted at.
Fusion's good.
No
disrespect.
It is.
No hate.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I wasn't crazy about Super Metroid when I played it either. And I mean, at the time, back in the day, I mean, I like it now, having gone kind of back. I kind of do get the early Metroids, though, like the NES one and Metroid 2. I don't want to give a hot take here, but not that many people would choose to play those versions now. Is that fair to say? They are pretty dated.
Yeah, I mean, with the original Metroid, you really, I think, had to be there. I was there, so okay, cool. Yeah. But I wouldn't recommend anyone start with the original Metroid. I would recommend starting with Zero Mission, which is such a good remake. And, you know, it doesn't hold your hand, but it does give you guidance, just enough to kind of point you in the right direction. It's got some really cool environmental set pieces. But, you know, Henry, if your thing is like, I don't want to be alone in this world for so long and have to find my way around, you know, there may be nothing to change that, because that's kind of inherently what Metroid is about, aside from Fusion and Other M. But I think Zero Mission does such a good job of giving you just enough, like, of a nudge to say you're going this way, but then leaving you to kind of figure out the way to get there on your own. And, you know, then for people who are like lunatic experts, it gives you opportunities to sequence break. But I'm not enough of a lunatic, as much as I love Metroid, to have been able to do that.
I think Fusion.
Have you played Zero Mission? Sorry, Kat.
Oh, you know, no, I have not. I did not give Zero Mission a try after. I was just so overloaded with the Metroid. I know it's funny to say that.
Too many.
Metroid, yeah, there's too many. But it was after Prime and Fusion at the same time. I was like, well, more of this? Eh, I'm good. I'm good.
I think you'll find that most Metroid fans don't like every Metroid across the board. I think I like half of them, where I like Super Metroid, Fusion, Zero Mission. I don't like the first two Metroid Prime games. I like Metroid Prime 3. That's controversial. People usually hate that game. I don't understand why. It's a great game. And then I plan on going back to this, but I played maybe 20 minutes of Metroid Dread, and it really threw me off in a way that was upsetting. I want to go back to it. I know it's good. I have to get through that. But starting me off in like stealth dungeons with insta-kill enemies, I'm not a big fan of that idea. But I want to push through that and play more. But I feel like most Metroid fans don't really like every game.
It's true. If you don't want to feel alone in this world, Metroid Fusion has you talking to an AI and is actually more story driven, I would say, than most Metroid games, to the point that a certain group of Metroid fans, I think, would find it a little off-putting. I enjoyed it ultimately. I thought it was cool and it's beautiful. And I think that over time, I think Metroid Fusion has risen in the esteem a lot for Metroid fans. Yeah. I understand where you're coming from, and I don't think that a number of people would agree with you. For me personally, the light story is a feature rather than a bug, because I find storytelling in video games often very overbearing and artificial. And to have the storytelling worked much more into the actual environments and to be far more subtle about it is, from my personal perspective, my personal taste, a real strength of the Metroid series. And I think Super Metroid is that captured that feeling the best, I think.
Yeah, I was going to mention, I mean, it's even with no dialogue to speak of, it's one of the most affecting games I've played, I think, in terms of prompting an emotional response. Maybe not quite so much as Sonic 3 and Knuckles, you know, but that was a joke. But no, I mean, there are multiple parts I can think of from Super Metroid that just... You know, like Corridor Full of Dead Scientists is a pretty solid one that make you kind of think, okay, maybe I'm going towards something a bit worrying here. And then, you know, the whole end sequence is just like about half an hour of just masterful, probably like peak SNES, is that fair to say? Mm-hmm. It's up there. I remember just yelling.
It can't be as good as Dragon Quest V. I can't.
I mean, I feel as though it can and is.
I think Super Metroid look, Henry, this is just me talking. I think that Super Metroid is not just the best game on the SNES. I mean, it might be one of the best pure games ever made, period. Like, just in terms of environments, level design, storytelling, controls, action, it remains incredibly relevant to this day.
Yeah.
I love Dragon Quest V. Don't get me wrong. Amazing. One of the best RPGs ever made, for sure.
It's the holy SNES Trinity. It's Dragon Quest V, Super Metroid, and Sanrio World Smash Ball. I think we're all in agreement on that one.
Hey, where's Pac-Man 2, The New Adventures?
That's fourth.
Okay, thank you.
Well, so yeah, look, I do agree with the idea. I also think game storytelling is so in your face and sweaty of just like, did everybody get the story? Like, I don't like that. And I like that Metroid pushes that forward. And yes, I have Nintendo Switch Online. I can play Super Metroid very easily right now with save states, even if I don't want to feel too challenged. But like, on top of that, there's other, like, you know, stealing ways to play it too. But, The other thing, with the games like the Metroid series that I have enjoyed, like another example would be the Guacamelee. I really love the game Guacamelee, and I think it
that has
just
wrestling,
maybe,
obviously.
Oh yes, I know. It's uh-huh. It's like maybe a tone and color thing too. Like, just that the world of Metroid can maybe be like too bleak for me. Like when I played Prime Remaster this week, I was just like, God, though, this is such a bummer. Like, I don't know. Again, some people want to feel that way about games. I get that.
I guess I've never thought of Metroid as bleak. That's so interesting.
Well, it's just, I mean, Fendrina Drifts is beautiful, you know? It's like a minimalist. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, I think it's because I always thought of it as color. I think it's because the colors have always been really strong. Like Samus's outfit, like she's got red and gold as opposed to gray, right? Yeah. And so I think that's why it always stood out to me as being not so much bleak. So that's the first time I've ever heard that adjective applied to the Metroid series.
She shoots like a rainbow. She's like a pride beam. It's great.
Well, of course, the only good one is Other M, because that you talk to characters all the time. They're always your friends. Like, it's explained very clearly. She's finally getting ordered around by a man, and she should be. Like, that's the one they really figured out.
All right. We've hit the trolling part of this episode.
Yes, this is going to seem rude, and on it, but I don't want Henry on this anymore. I'm sorry. It's not anymore.
Other M spelled backwards is mother. Think about it.
Whoa.
Wait, what?
No, yes, Other M sucks. I get it. That's what I'm saying. I am joking around.
Well, one day I will play 1UP.com's copy. They don't need it anymore.
One day I won't ever play that game ever again in my entire life until I am a corpse.
Okay, so we've made it through a single round of this, and we're more than an hour into this podcast. My goodness. Let's loop back around and try to do a speed round to get one more in for everyone. Although my next pick may not... You know, I'm going to actually skip ahead to the third item on my list, because I feel like the second one is a bag of worms.
Yes, I saw it.
Or can of worms, yeah. It's not gonna be a short conversation. So yeah. Let's go with number three. While we're all busy shitting on Nintendo games, here we go. Here's mine. Golden Sun. Not actually a Nintendo game, but published by Nintendo. Closely tied to the Nintendo property. Boy, I hate it. The first one, the second one, the third one too. My God. Just everyone in this game needs to shut up. And just find a better combat system. Just please stop doing what you're doing. Nothing about this game appeals to me. I don't think I am genetically capable of liking Camelot RPGs. That might be the issue.
Have you played the tennis one? Because it's great.
I was going to say sports games notwithstanding. Those are different. Yeah.
Fair play.
Those are two things I hate: Camelot RPGs and sports. And you put them together, and somehow I'm like, yeah, I'm into this.
Mario Power Tennis, or whatever it's called in the US on my Game Boy Advance. I must have played that for 1,000 hours. It was so good.
Yeah, it's a real shame Camelot is no longer allowed to do that, because then they go make their own RPGs, and that's not a good thing for them to be doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's coming out on the Switch Online. They're bringing Golden Sun to that, aren't they? That's one of the things they've promised. So they say threatened.
They have. Yes, exactly.
I mean, do you not at least like the thing where you can say yes or no and you've got a little sprite guy shaking his head or nodding? That's cute.
No,
right?
Because the thing is, like, there is no such thing as a brief conversation in these games. Okay. Everyone says the same thing like 20 times and you have to choose yes and no so many times while people just restate the same things over and over again. And I get that this is kind of a cadence of like the natural Japanese language, and it just reads differently there. And, you know, for in that language, it just the culture, it comes across differently. But when they localize it into English, it's just like, shut up. I know this already. You don't have to keep telling me this. Oh, my God. You were going to say something.
I'm going to defend Golden Sun, even though I don't really care about it. We just did Golden Sun for my podcast, Acts of the Blood God. We have this series called Pantheon of the Blood God, and it got voted. Yes. As a pick, and you should go listen to that episode.
Yes, the one time I've interacted on your Discord so far was to vote no.
No. We had noted Golden Sun superfan Reb Valentine on the show. And bless her heart, she defended that game as hard as she could. And it occurred to me that a few things to know about Golden Sun. First, the people who made it, I think, connect all the way back directly back to Dragon Quest, and then also the Shining Force games, I want to say. So big 16-bit energy. And so in that sense, Golden Sun is a very classic RPG. And it's really a great entry point for the genre if you are new to it. So I think a lot of people who are very experienced with RPGs, especially in the GBA, who are looking for something as fully featured or fully rounded as a Final Fantasy or even a Dragon Quest game, were coming out very, very disappointed, I think. Whereas people who had never really come to the genre before were like, I get this. And the Jin system was like pretty good. Golden Sun 2 was far bigger and far more fully featured than the first game. And I think finally, like if you play it on Analog Pocket today, it is beautiful. So
I think it still looks great for its age.
It really does.
So yeah, I played all the way through the original Golden Sun as well on the Game Boy Advance and, when it was new. And yeah, I loved it as a graphical powerhouse for the GBA, and that it was like doing things that almost looked like an N64 game with camera movements and stuff like that. I liked, and yes, like everybody else here, I loved the Game Boy Color and Game Boy Advance Camelot tennis game and golf game. Like their RPGs in Mario Golf and Tennis, loved them. And so I also really did like the Golden Sun aesthetic as well. But yeah, two, I agree on the talkativeness. And also by the time Golden Sun 2 came out, I was kind of like done with its world. Like the world itself feels just so like off the rack fantasy. Like it doesn't feel special enough of a fantasy world. The Jins also to me were just like wannabe Pokemon, but at least they like all had a thing that they do, like they can do something like gameplay wise.
Yeah, actually this is slightly related, but I feel the same way about Octopath Traveler in that they have a really cool graphic style, really cool systems at play, but the fantasy stuff that they chose for their storyline is off the shelf. It was like bargain bin tropes, and then I got 20 hours in and I was very bored. I don't really care about the sequel. So I feel like that can push a game a long way if there are more interesting ideas going on in terms of like the what they're doing with the genre.
It's very young.
Yeah. And maybe that's my problem is that, you know, by that point I was contributing as a writer for the Gaming Intelligence Agency. I had written strategy guides on RPGs for GameSpot. So maybe I was just the wrong audience for Golden Sun, but yeah, it didn't click for me. And, you know, I'm coming into this, well, at the time that wasn't true, but like, I feel like it is a series that revolves around Jin. I should just inherently like it.
Oh, I get it.
Okay. So yeah, thank you. Thank you.
No, Jeremy.
Yes.
I was 19 when this game came out and I thought, am I too old for RPGs? But it turns out I think this is just a good RPG for kids.
Yeah. So I was going to say, is there something I should do to learn to love this game? But it sounds like maybe shave about 35 years off my age, which sure, I'd love to know more, but I don't know if that's necessarily
play
realistic.
It on Dragon, so, play it on Analog Pocket.
But how is that going to change all the like the bad dialogue and just the kind of mundane combat system?
Play it that's, on that's Analog the, Pocket the while issue. Watching a television show with a better story.
Yes. and bring your own gin. Bring your own gin with you.
Ah, summon there we go. Hey. Okay. Yeah,
maybe if you had enough gin, you might regress to the point of being a 13-year-old.
All right. I'll give it a try and report back once I'm out of the hospital. Okay, so Golden Sun. Bob, what about you? What's your next pick?
Okay, I've got a slightly broad pick, but I can talk about it very quickly here. And it's, you know, it's not on the list because I looked at my list of games and I'm like, well, I can think of something more exciting, more controversial, more.
Oh, great.
The message boards are going to go flying off. They're going to start catching on fire. The Discord is going to be populated with messages. I'm going to say I dislike every Double Fine game. There,
whoa,
I said it.
Wow.
Don't like,
whoa,
any of them.
But you're Mr. Monkey Island.
Unrelated.
Rules. Okay. I've never heard anyone say that. I'm
Thank
so excited.
Now listen, I'm happy they exist. They're like the last developer left in San Francisco, and I hope they are profitable, and I hope they last forever. But I feel like I having revisited the LucasArts Adventure games, I feel like I don't like Tim Schafer's choices as a game designer. I feel like they're against what I prefer to see in a video game. And I also feel like a lot of their games, or most of them, it's basically a funny pitch that does not amount to a game that's worth playing for more than an hour or two. And the pitches are funny. The pitches are interesting. But when something like Costume Quest came out, everyone was like, it's just like Earthbound. I'm the guy who's looking for Earthbound games. And I love Undertale, and I love Deltarune, and I love things that do interesting ideas within that sort of riff of an Earthbound game. But it was just like the same RPG battle over and over, with, I guess, some charming graphics. But
you'd be better off playing South Park Stick of Truth for Earthbound than the Costume Quest, I'd
say. But then I have to deal with those libertarian Gen X politics, right?
Well, yes. Yeah.
But why would, yeah, like, why would they say it was like Earthbound? Why would anyone ever say that? I'm so upset.
I'm very confused too, Stuart.
Why would they lie?
I'm willing to give Psychonauts 2 a chance because it feels like they finally figured out what they want to do. It feels very playable. And I like some of the story ideas in Psychonauts 1. But having been there at the time, having bought Psychonauts New, I don't know how that game has any fans because it is not fun to play. It is a mess, especially in terms of platforming. If they were allowed to just make it an adventure game, and I bet that's what they wanted to do, it would have been a better game, but it was 2005. But I'm just saying this, and if you work at Double Fine, I love you, and I've enjoyed some of your games to an extent, but I feel like Double Fine games for me don't go beyond an amusing pitch. And that is my my case, and I'm sticking to it.
Wow.
I want to stick up for Brutal Legend, but maybe only the first couple of hours of Brutal Legend, and then you watch the rest on YouTube.
See, it's funny you say that, Stuart, because, yeah, that is kind of how I felt with a lot of Double Fine games, too, that after a few hours, like, this was Costume Quest for me as well. Well, for Psychonauts 2, it actually was that I just was feeling overload of, like, no, I have to hear every funny line, because every line is funny, so I have to talk to everybody, like, three times, and it was just, I was feeling overloaded by it, but also Brutal Legend as well, I just was like, eh. And even Broken Age, I played it to the end of the Act 1, and I didn't play the second half when it came out, and I kickstarted that, but, like, yeah, the writing is good, the development is good, but yeah, there's something about playing them I'm not as into. I can hear you there, Bob. Yeah,
but again, I'm happy they're still allowed to exist within the horrible ecosystem of the gaming world. I just I can't connect with what they want to do, and eventually I had to stop pretending I was into them and just I just had to be quiet with my dislike of their games. But the remasters of the older games have been good, and again, Psychonauts 2 seems like it's much better than what they did before. They were finally given a real budget and enough time to make turn the idea that they had into a good game, supposedly. But yeah, even their Kickstarter adventure game, people are telling me to not play it. People are saying it's very flawed. And then other people from LucasArts past have gone on to make very good things, but I feel like I just don't connect with Tim Schafer's mentality in terms of game design. His ideas are very fun. The games are not.
I'm with you, Bob. I don't care for Double Fine's house art style. I don't particularly like adventure games. I find the writing very twee. And so I don't know of any Double Fine game that I've ever particularly enjoyed, even though I respect them as a studio and understand that they have a lot of fans.
Nobody here a fan of Massive Chalice?
I played Ooh. Massive Chalice. I spent a bunch of time covering it, and I loved the idea behind it of the multi-generational characters who live and die and grow and everything. It was like Bob was saying, it was a cool pitch that never was developed very far.
I just like saying Massive Chalice, that's all.
Yeah.
I don't have any advice here. I haven't really spent that much time with Double Fine games. Sorry.
I really liked Psychonauts 2, but if you didn't like the first one, it is more or less the same exact thing, that the levels, if anything, are even longer.
Yeah, I mean, platforming isn't there. They're great ideas with all right platforming. Like, I think when I think of playing Psychonauts 1, I have very happy memories about the Milkman stage, but all the rest of the stages I associate with frustration in trying to complete them, like to do the last thing in it. It's not happy memories.
Yeah, it has to play better than Psychonauts 1. But again, I'm willing to give them more of a chance, and it feels like they're starting to make things I'm more interested in. But to date, I've had to pretend to like their games. At risk of offending people, but now I don't care.
Well, I hope Big Daddy Microsoft doesn't shut him down after.
Are they owned by Microsoft?
Yeah, they got everybody forgets this. Yeah, yeah.
Well, no wonder they still exist.
Yeah.
All right, so Kat, what about you? Do you have any controversial picks?
I don't know about controversial, but for me, this one is a little heartbreaking. I'm a fan of history, as maybe some people know. I enjoy listening to historical podcasts. I was recently in Philadelphia. I went to the Liberty Bell. Enjoyed learning about that kind of thing. I thought that I kept thinking I should like Assassin's Creed. This is a series that should speak to me. It's spread across a variety of historical settings that I really enjoy. I'm like, yeah, I want to hang out in Renaissance era Italy. I want to hang out in the American Revolution. And this series has, for one reason or another, just never clicked with me, even at its absolute best. I went to Florence in 2011. And when I came back, I thought, okay, this is it. I literally was staying right next to the Duomo. I am going to play Assassin's Creed 2. This is my moment. And I picked up Assassin's Creed 2, and I was so bored. And I don't really know why. Like, maybe it's the running across the rooftops didn't connect with me. Maybe the story didn't connect with me. Maybe the missions never really connected with me. Maybe it was too simple. Maybe I just really, really, really did not care for the Templar versus Assassin story that was like the overarching story that's taking place in the current era. A lot of people love Assassin's Creed 2 and laud especially that trilogy. But to me, it only got worse over time. Assassin's Creed 3, terrible. Assassin's Creed 4, the Black Flag. I love the idea of being a pirate. Did not vibe with me. It already felt dated by that point, even though it was a PS4 launch title and objectively quite beautiful. I kind of hated the movement. I didn't really want to play Odyssey because I don't really care about that particular setting. And Valhalla was just a really bad Witcher clone. Really bad. Just terrible. Jeez, it just kept going. Just, it would not end. And then this is a broader rant about Ubisoft. I don't like Ubisoft games. I can't think of a single Ubisoft game I have ever liked. Their games are derivative. They take things that are already popular and they make them worse for a mass market. Wow. Their graphics are never that great. Their games are incredibly buggy. I don't see any redeeming qualities to Ubisoft games. Sorry.
I guess if you're a fan of mass workplace abuse, they could have some appeal, but I don't think any of us are.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to pretend.
And they were just ripping that off from Activision.
Who ripped it off from Riot Games?
Shameless. I agree with Kat, both in terms of I have very extreme Ubisoft fatigue. I did play through Assassin's Creed 2. It's the only one I ever played through. And maybe that was because I was in like my eighth month of unemployment. So it just filled time and it was fine. But after I finished that, I thought, do I ever want this experience again? And I tried it again and it turns out no.
So I probably am the person who's played the most Assassin's Creed in here, and I agree with all the things you just said, Kat, and also especially the Ubisoft Game Factory is a huge reason I fell off of the Assassin's Creed series after the Ezio trilogy. But two Revelations and whatever
Bloodline.
The fourth, thank you. Those three I did really enjoy, even though also I hate its Da Vinci Code ripoff storyline too. They're just like, oh yeah, it's and they kept trying to make the modern day stuff a thing when it's like, this sucks. I hate this
shit.
Desmond guy. He's a
and
bullshit.
Then they killed him.
Yeah, because they're like, okay, we agree, he sucks. He's not gonna ever star in a game. But just like how they killed Kristen Bell's character, because they're like, yeah, I guess we don't know what to do with her. And she's getting to be more expensive every game. So forget it. We'll kill her and not even explain it. Spoilers.
I find that I've somehow found myself playing quite a lot of Ubisoft games because they tend to end up being either free or disgustingly cheap. And almost every single time I'm like, this time they're not going to fool me. And then I'll pick something up like Far Cry 5 or whatever, and I'll play it and I'll just be like, oh, what the hell? This one sucks too. Like, you know, almost all the others. What the hell's going on? I liked Far Cry 2 because it was so dodgy and weird and bad. And I'm going to confess to liking Splinter Cell, but they haven't made any of those for like 10 years now, so like, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I feel like at this point, at the risk of invoking, you know what, I feel like it's almost a moral imperative not to buy Ubisoft games at this point. Mm-hmm. It's like, come on. Like, do you really need to play this janky ass, the same goddamn game every year that they keep putting out? They're just, like you said about Assassin's Creed Valhalla, I got that with my Xbox Series, and it's just shit. It's boring, bland.
It's just partially hydrogenated game-like material that's just like...
Yeah,
just
it's game loaf.
Game loaf, just keep munching. Game yeah. loaf, it's filling, I guess.
You know, it's not just the clever
studio,
name. It's not just the clever name. They do make ubiquitous software. They lived up to their ironic name.
The one Ubisoft game I ever liked was Rayman.
Oh, I forgot Rayman.
Rayman Legends.
Rayman Oranges and Rayman Lemons, yeah.
No, I enjoy those games too. My only other defense for Assassin's Creed is that the last one... So yeah, I fell off with 3. 3 was boring, and I never got to... Every time I'd hear like, no, this one's going to be the good one, then there was a big problem with it. I also can't believe they did it annualized for so long, because they're just... They had so some of the worst game bloat of a series ever. Like, everyone had to get bigger and bigger and bigger and be everything. Now, going on what Bob said about being laid off during the lockdown, that's when I did pick back up Odyssey. I played Odyssey, and I played 100 hours of it and did everything you can do, not counting some of the DLC.
It's just like video game Soylent. It's a pouch of game you can suck on.
Okay, so look, yes, but it was also very pretty. Mm-hmm. And this also sounds bad, because one of the things we learned about Ubisoft's horrible abuse was they wanted it to be the first game that starred only a female character. They were pushed by sexist assholes who own the company. You got to have a man and a woman. It has to be a pick. And so they do that. But I liked playing as the guy in the game, because you could actually like have gay sex in that game for once. And very few AAA games offer gay sex.
In the DLC, they make him have a heterosexual relationship, right? For the necessity of the bloodline or something. It just happens. No matter how you've roleplayed your character.
That's right. Boy, I'm negative on that now, too. Okay.
Ubisoft's going to let you down no matter what. I've heard that Odyssey is the one to play, and that's or Origins, I guess.
Well, it's also part of their game loaf. They ripped off Dark Souls pretty well.
I love game loaf.
They added that to the
loaf.
Recipe of the game loaf.
I'll give them that they have unique settings. The settings are cool, but they never... I was even kind of interested in Far Cry 5. I was like, well, I'm kind of interested in the setting, but it's so tacky.
Every time they're like, oh, we're doing something radical and difficult and challenging, and then they never do. It's always bullshit, just cop out crap.
We think the player should decide what this game is saying.
The game is saying, don't play me.
Now, in fairness, God. I've heard of Assassin's Creed Syndicate. Like, a lot of people are saying, oh, Syndicate's okay. The one that's set during the French Revolution is actually better than a lot of people gave it credit for, especially now that it's been patched.
Unity, with that terrifying glitch where the faces appeared outside of their mesh. It was awful.
But I've got better things to do in my life, honestly. I don't want to play it.
See, I would say you only ever need to play one Assassin's Creed, but is that, do you even need to play one Assassin's Creed when you, I mean, I don't know.
She has now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess the last Ubi thing that I liked was Immortals, and I don't even know if I liked it. I just played it. You know what I mean? I just kept playing it. I don't know if I ever had fun solving any of the stupid puzzles where you roll balls all over the place and just crap. It just felt like busy work, ticking off bits of a map for just days on end.
Wasn't that also like the Ubi game loaf of Breath of the Wild, pretty much?
Yeah, it was Breath of... I mean, I liked it more than Breath of the Wild, but that's because I'm insane.
Ooh, what?
I don't like weapon degradation.
If you want to play a cool game that's actually about assassinating people, the new Hitman trilogy, which is now just one game. Amazing.
Yeah, no, Assassin's Creed actually isn't really about killing. I mean, you murder people all the time in it.
Yeah, it is,
but actually be giving an assignment to, like, kill this guy is fairly unimportant to it most of the time.
Yeah.
You do get to beat up the Pope, though. That's cool.
Well, if you want to play a cool game about assassinating people, can I recommend Mega Man, any of the fine Mega Man games?
Find the robots in their homes, kill them, steal their weapons. It's great. It's, you know, heartwarming. All right, I have nothing to add about Assassin's Creed. I've played the games, but I don't ever want to revisit any of them. So let's move along and ask Stuart, what's your second and final pick for this episode?
See, I was going to pick LucasArts Adventure Games, but I feel like Bob doing Double Fine has sort of pipped that to the post a bit, so I'm not going to pick that.
Maybe that's why I did it, Stuart. You never know.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to go for Pokemon, mainline Pokemon. Now, I loved Pokemon when I was younger, and I understand the fun behind collecting all of the Pokemon or learning about all of the Pokemon or knowing what's up with all the Pokemon, what they're up to and all that stuff. And I have liked some of the spin-off games like Pokemon Ranger or Pokemon Mystery Dungeon, all that sort of thing. For me, the appeal of Pokemon is absolutely not in those mainline games where it feels like it barely feels like they've evolved in the ones that I've played. And I've played all the way up to, I want to say Scarlet? That not the most recent one, the one before that. Sword and Shield. That's what I've played. And that just felt almost like the same game again, except with the slightly more rolling hills. And the gameplay doesn't seem to change. It doesn't seem to get any more difficult. I mean, I know there's challenging stuff in the post-game and such, but when you're running through those games, it almost just feels like you may as well just, you know, you've got your stronger Pokemon, you use them, you find a Pokemon in the grass, you knock the health down, you throw the Pokeball, sometimes they go into Pokeball, sometimes they don't. That's not what's fun about Pokemon for me. What's fun about Pokemon is seeing Pokemon interacting or finding out about the Pokemon. And once you've seen all the Pokemon, once you've interacted with all the Pokemon, you've had the fun with it. I didn't really feel the need to put them in a ball. It just seemed unnecessary to me. And it seemed like very fragmented sort of gameplay that barely changed from the original Game Boy all the way up to the present day. They get flashier, they get nicer looking, but really it's just picking from one of four options on a menu that's over and over again. And I just don't get it. I really don't. Not a franchise I reject, like I've said. I mean, I used to love the anime, I used to like the manga, the comics, I used to like the pogs that had Pokemon on them, you know? And the card game is fun, the trading card game, I like that too, but the actual mainline games just not fun. I just don't get why people like them. And I suppose an annoying irony is that I've heard the new one is actually quite a big departure. I don't know if the new one is Scarlet and Violet. I'm not sure. I've heard interesting things about that, apart from the fact that it's a bit of a technical disaster, but I expect that from Game Freak. So that's fine. And I liked Arceus. Is it Arceus Legends? The one set in the past they did? I thought that was a cool reinvention of it, where you're actually physically throwing the ball at the Pokemon. That was cool. But then they seem to have gone back to the kind of battle system that they always use, and it's just never evolved, and it's just not, you know, I don't pretend to be some big, huge fan, so I can't say I really understand the full intricacies of the battle system, so maybe it has massively evolved, and people are wanting to hit me quite hard in the head right now, but I can only hope that that's not the case, and, you know.
I'm going to open up the floor to Kat Bailey right now.
Oh, hello. it's interesting, Stuart. I'm kind of out on Pokemon these days, too, but I've anybody who's been listening to me on Retronauts for the past 10 years will tell you that I've been saying that. For me, this is a strictly personal thing. Pokemon was, for me, the thing that made it special was that there weren't any other competitive turn-based RPGs in the JRPG style out there. And I loved the surplus of choice. I loved the density of the actual mechanics. And I loved the strategy of battling people back and forth and that kind of thing. That's what really grabbed me. And over the years, I think that a lot of people would agree that the actual storyline has typically been kind of a tutorial or an introduction to the series, especially to grab younger players who have never played these games before. And I think that a lot of people have found that tiresome, but I can't necessarily fault Game Freak because it's certainly worked for them. I mean, even now you look at, there's a generation of kids who say, Pokemon X and Y is my favorite because that's the one I grew up with. And every so often, that's how it is. Like, you get the people who grew up with each successive generation of Pokemon. In truth, Pokemon has been a live service game disguised as a single player RPG almost from its inception. And I don't necessarily like where that live service game aspect is going from. But that, to me, is where the evolution is happening with this series, is in the live service aspects. And I don't fault anybody who doesn't care for that necessarily. But I think that the actual single player campaign elements are much more, shall we say, an introduction or a tutorial.
I mean, they're a tutorial that lasts for like 30 to 40 hours.
It's too long. So, I agree. So, I wish I could skip it.
I mean, if I was going to play one now, it would probably be one of the original Game Boy ones, just because then I would feel like the mechanics actually matched the way that the game looked, rather than, like, even today, but if I boot up something like Sword, it would still be that same combat system from the Game Boy with very little dressing it up. And that's, you know, it was all there by, almost all there by Pokemon Gold, it seems. You know, the whole Pokemon holding items, the bag full of items, all that stuff. It feels like it really hasn't come that far. And one of my big pet peeves is when I feel like the visuals don't match the gameplay in any respect, and that kind of puts me off a lot. So I guess I'll just play Mystery Dungeon instead, because that's fine.
Do you want it to be like an action game? Is that what you're looking for?
Well, I want it to be something.
It's a turn-based RPG by definition, right?
It is. I know. Yeah, it is. I suppose it's the fact that, yeah. I mean, if it was more like, if Pokemon like Arceus had been a turn-based RPG, it would be, then I probably wouldn't enjoy it. So I don't think it is just that I don't like RPGs, because I do. It's just not what I find appealing about the world of, you know, walking through the grass, getting the random battles to try and find the right kind of Pokemon that you're looking for. Getting stopped on the way by the trainers who then come over to you and fight you. You know, it is not dissimilar to something like, I play something like Chrono Trigger and I would be fine with that, where you can, you know, you see the monsters on the map and they'll come and attack you. But there, I feel like even there, the complexity is, you've got multiple characters active at once rather than just 1v1, although they might have changed that now and I don't know about it.
Stuart, a lot of these things you're saying is addressed in Scarlet and Violet. These are things that are like, these, they don't pop out of the grass anymore. All the Pokemon are on screen. They've separate the tutorials. It is still a lot of tutorial, but they separate the things. You play them in a much more open order of like, hey, do you want to do all of the Team Rocket stuff now? Do that, and later you can do the trainer battles. And also, like, you don't have to fight trainers along the path. It is a choice to fight any of them. It's not an instant into a battle, but they give you rewards for it. Like, there are so many things. I feel you. I dropped off on Pokemon several games ago too, but I gave Scarlet another chance, and there's so many improvements. Oppositely, I will say, when you see all of those quality of life improvements, also like auto battle against weaker Pokemon, you just are like, oh, I just hit the R button and my Pokemon just flies out and kills the guy in front of me that I know it can kill in two turns. Like, it does all this stuff. But when you see those improvements, then you go like, well, then why is it still silent? How is there not spoken dialogue in this game? You do all this other stuff to update it. Or also, yes, it could use a bit more QA, I would say.
Yeah. I'm partially in Stuart's camp because I played the first one. I wish I was 5 years younger, because this would definitely have appealed to me more. But I played the first one when I'd been playing RPGs for a decade, and I thought, well, this is fairly simple, but I want to be part of the phenomenon. And then that momentum carried me into Gold and Silver. But after that, I tried maybe four other times to get into Pokemon, and every time I met with the same thing, in which, oh, it's the 1996 battle system. I know that's changed now, but it's essentially sort of the same. And then, like, Sun and Moon, I think, was the last time I tried to get in. I went in thinking, okay, really going to get through this tutorial this time, really going to explore Pokemon. I know I'm missing out, but then it's like, well, here's a 2-hour tutorial, how to move your character, how to select things from a menu. There should be an option like, I am an adult. Yes. I have played so many of these. I know how to do this. It's not you select one of four things from a menu. But I was a little too old. And because of that, I played them alone, which is not how you're supposed to play these games. So I feel like I missed out on the social phenomenon as well. But I mean, you can't be around for everything. There'll be cool games coming out after I'm dead. That sucks. But I won't be around to know about it,
oh,
at least.
Oh, God.
There's going to be Mario games I can't play because I'll be in the ground. No, we got to figure out the metaverse immediately.
I'm not okay with
this. Since this is a Retronauts episode,
what a bummer.
I will say that just recently, I dug out pretty much all of my Pokemon games. It's like $1,000 worth of games at this point. And I was playing some Pokemon Emerald and Pokemon Crystal, again, on the Analog Pocket. And I found myself just really vibing with them. I think the style, which at the time was a little dated, really holds up, especially with Crystal and Emerald. The really nice pixel art. It doesn't feel derivative anymore. It's a throwback, especially compared to Scarlet and Violet. I enjoy revisiting the Hoenn region. I enjoy revisiting Pokemon that just aren't as available anymore. There are a lot of things I dislike about current gen Pokemon. Like, I don't like the focus on raids. I don't like the fact that you can't catch them all anymore, strictly speaking. I don't particularly like the current art style, that kind of thing. So I don't like the battle system. I don't like the gimmicks that they've added to it in terms of like the turning into a crystal. I don't like turning into a crystal. I don't like getting really giant. I like the straightforward battle system of the past. So
you can go
I think
into
you'd
a
be
giant.
Surprised by how well Pokemon Crystal in particular holds up. It is a beautiful game.
If I was going to play one, it would probably be that, Gold, Silver, or Crystal, because I remember liking Gold more when I was younger. I just got to say, because you mentioned Emerald, and I'm not going to get the chance to mention this, the intro cutscene to Emerald is one of the greatest things I've ever seen. It's the most self-aggrandizing, just like, yeah, we're the shit. We know it's Pokemon. Look at this logo. It's so shiny. You know, who's going to touch us? No one. Come on. This is going to sell 10 million easy in the first week. Let's go.
16
And I respect that. Yeah.
I have nothing to add except that Pokemon was only interesting to me in the era of two screens, where after I got bored of playing, which doesn't take too long, I could close the screen, and then a little bit later I could be like, dunk, and there I was, just able to keep playing. I played a lot of Pokemon, what was it, Pearl and Heart Gold, and some of the later ones, hundreds of hours. And I have zero desire to go back and play new Pokemon games because I can't close the lid. That's really weird, I realize, but...
You can hit the home screen on your Switch.
No, Jeremy, we just need a double screen system again. This is solving every problem we all have. Yeah.
I agree.
I lament about this weekly with someone.
I think the furthest I got into one was Pokemon Black, of all things. I really liked the plot in that for some reason. There was a lot of focus on spectacle. Like, you'd go into this huge city and it would like zoom out and just be like... different for once, you know, and it was just kind of cool. But then I think
wasn't
I lost
that the one in France.
It's on the DS and
now Black and White's New York City. I think
yeah.
It is.
Oh, right.
It's the America one.
One of the better ones.
I think I lost my save because I was playing it pirated on the Supercard DS1. Don't pirate games, kids.
Oh no,
that's your fault. There.
Just kidding. Yeah, it's fine to pirate games.
You can't
Let's
beat
go.
You can't beat a Pokemon game in 24 hours. So you can't download the ROM.
You just stepped on my catchphrase.
I did. I beat you
now
to
I'm
it.
I'm going to step on your catchphrase. I'm going to step on your catchphrase now.
If you vote that ROM site in the top 100 ROM sites, you're allowed to keep the ROM extra time.
Oh, oh really?
That's what I heard. Wow. Yeah.
Life hack. Okay.
Okay.
All right, so we should wrap this up, and that means it's up to Henry to bring us home and share your final lamentation for the evening. What would that be, Henry?
Well, so, you know, just to not be repetitive with another Nintendo thing or a JRPG, I'm picking my second one on the list here for variety's sake. It is the Gran Turismo series, which every time I see that it is like the biggest selling, this also feels, maybe I'm not going to get much disagreement on this one, but I'm always shocked of like one of the biggest selling series in PlayStation history. Gigantic, gigantic series. And it's not even that I dislike racing games, though I don't like love them, but I always like have a good time with an arcade-y racing game. Like I do really like them, and I don't just mean Mario Kart, but I do like Mario Kart a lot. But I mean, I like racing games, but it is the simness of it. Like cars are boring as hell to me. I hate driving cars in real life. I haven't driven a car in 15 years at least. Like the dream of owning every type of car and collecting them like Pokemon, I can see how that is appealing to someone. But yeah, the sim nature of it, it always felt so buttoned down and held back. Like even the Forza games at least felt like they had a little more personality to them and wanted to have fun. Gran Turismo just never made sense to me.
So here's the thing, Henry. Video game fans don't care about Gran Turismo. Video game fans don't buy Gran Turismo. They don't play it. Gran Turismo is played by people who love cars and would not normally play video games. It is Madden, but with wheels, basically.
Oh, man, that's the coolest thing I can imagine. John Madden running around everywhere.
John Madden on wheels.
He's like that boss in Smash TV.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
yeah, basically.
Same sound effects.
Yeah, I mean, it's meant to appeal to a different, like, to scratch a different itch. And so I think, though, the secret to loving Gran Turismo is to just stop liking video games, cars. Yeah. And Gran Turismo it'll light up your pleasure centers.
I think for Gran Turismo, the thing that gets me about it is it's like, oh, you can drive all of these like supercars that you wouldn't get to drive, obviously, in real life. Of course, I'm not going to get to drive them. But then you get the game and then you can't drive them because you have to do all the license tests and pass loads and loads of races and elevate yourself into the ranks to drive the Bugattis or the Ferraris or whatever. And I'm just kind of like, you know, I've got a license and I can't drive these cars. So if I wanted to like continue to not drive these cars, I would simply live my real life instead of playing the game, you know?
I just want to say that I think I'm the only one here who actually cares about sports or plays sports games. And I don't care about cars, but I do respect the Gran Turismo series. And I have car people in my life. And the thing that I respect about the Gran Turismo series, first of all, especially on the PlayStation 1, those were some of the most beautiful games
insane.
That platform. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Those games looked incredible.
They still look pretty good, honestly. Stylized, but pretty good.
Yeah. The sound design, the depth of the mechanics. I mean,
yeah, like the suspension on each car, like it's wild.
They went through the trouble of recording every single engine so that it was accurate for every one of the cars, and these games were loaded with cars. Like if you were a car nut, these games were heaven. So I can totally respect that there are people like, I freaking love Gran Turismo. I want to play the heck out of these games. So that's my take on the series.
Yeah, it was a killer app for the PlayStation. And also, the DualShock controller launched with this game. It was the one of the first games to support it. And it rumbled in a different way depending on the car. And my experience was, I like racing. I love the soundtrack by alt-rock band Ash. They're great. And I enjoyed it to a point. But then I found myself in a license race, you know, trying to get a better license or however it worked, I forget, and just running the same race over and over again, trying to shave like a tenth of a second off of my time. And I thought, everything we do is a waste of time ultimately, but this feels especially like a waste of time and I need to be doing something else. So I think I dabbled in two, but I had the same problem in that it was just too, like you said, Henry, too much of a simulation and not enough about the fun. But if you're into that, if you're into cars and I'm not, I can see that it is heaven for you and nothing else is like it, like Kat said.
I know that
there's nothing wrong with simulations. I mean, I'm sorry.
I like sim wrestling games. Those are the games. I guess, too, there was something, too, that I never liked about it, as far as the fandom of it, in that because of its graphics, like, everybody's like, well, it's the best-looking graphics on each. It's usually the best-looking game on whatever PlayStation it's on, or one of the best. And I got to say, like, it feels like cheating to have great graphics in a racing game. The camera is stuck in a specific spot. Like, you know what you're playing. Like, it just feels like, oh, it's the best. If somebody says a racing game has the best graphics, I'm like, well, call me when it's a different genre, because that doesn't count to
me. Oh, Henry.
It's cheating. It's not cheating, dude.
First of all, the various perspectives of the cars require a lot of work to do. Like, not just the tracks themselves, which, by the way, in the original Gran Turismo, were very detailed and very true to life, like the way its depictions of Tokyo and such. But, like, being able to show the third-person view of the car, being able to show the cockpit of the car, and then having all of the little details there that match up while you're driving. The actual physics of the car matter a ton, and, like, racing games are often really ahead of the game on that. Environmental interactions. I just can't go along with you on this one, Henry. I'm sorry.
I sort of get where you're coming from to a point, but I disagree as strongly as it's possible for a human being to disagree with another human being.
I agree with Henry to the point where I don't think the Cars movies are real movies. Render a human being, then I'll see your movie.
But they're actually making a movie of Gran Turismo. It's coming. They're doing Gran Turismo, the movie, even though they already did it in 2008 and Clint Eastwood was in it, and it was not about cars. And that was weird.
Ka-chow. Did he say ka-chow? Oh, he said other things. Never mind. Yeah,
he said some racist slurs, I believe.
Yeah. Ka-chow does sound racist.
It actually kind of does, doesn't it? Yeah. It is weird that Sony is like just, they open up the license factory. Like, we don't have our own streamer, so if you want to make a game into something, Amazon, HBO, whoever, have at it.
Well, I mean, the Uncharted movie was 5-star quality, I understand. I think I read a review on Sony's official website that said it was that good.
But yeah, so fine. I get it. I mean, again, I like other racing games. Like, also on PlayStation, when the Gran Turismo came out, I was of the mind of, like, when a friend tried to tell me about it, I was like, let's just play the new Ridge Racer. That's, like, more exciting. Or I'm sure there's a good Wipeout on here. Let's play this instead.
It's like telling somebody who's an aviation aficionado, look, just play freaking Ace Combat. I'm like, well, actually, I want to play Flight Simulator.
Just play Tom Clancy's Hawks.
It's like there's a value in, like, a really defined simulation. By the way, Gran Turismo, I will say that actually by driving simulation standards, especially these days, not that realistic, actually. It kind of, like, splits the middle between arcade racer and simulation. If there's anything to criticize about the Gran Turismo series, aside from its kind of heavily, if I recall correctly, the most recent one is kind of heavily monetized, it's that. But as for being a simulation, like, there's nothing wrong with that.
All right. Well,
sorry, Henry.
For myself, like, I have come to accept driving as a necessary evil as a person who lives in America and not in a city with decent mass transit. But even though, you know, over time, I've gradually gotten smaller and faster cars that are more enjoyable to drive, I still don't want to sit in front of the TV and be like, I'm pretending to drive a really, really nice car now. I don't know. It just doesn't have any appeal to me. See, so I'm there with you, Henry.
I want to do that, but I want to do it in, like, Steelport in Saints Row or something. Like, I want to crash that car. You know, I want to have
Nitro like Grand Theft Auto, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I'm driving this car realistically so that I can, you know, do a crazy stunt and smash into, you know, a policeman or something.
Like, I totally respect that they're offering a different experience for, you know, the gearheads who want to. I mean, Gran Turismo, getting right down under the bonnet of those cars, mixing and matching components, and getting to look at how all these cars are put together. That's fascinating for these people. if I was going to play a driver driving game, I'd play something like Forza Horizon, or I'd just go back in time and play Burnout 3 again, which is in no way a simulation. It's a simulation of how I wish I could drive, but no.
Yeah, Stuart, I think you're right. Ultimately, we need to revive the Burnout series, and then we can also be happy to have Gran Turismo.
And EA can run that, too.
By revive, yeah. I mean just re-release 3 with no changes at all. I don't even care if it's still in standard definition. I just 3... Anything either way of that, not okay. Just three. No revenge, no two, just three. Thank you.
3 is one of the best arcade racing games ever, right? So
it rules.
Can't
as a whole mode, it's just about crashing. Amazing. Yeah.
So I don't know that we necessarily came up with any solutions this episode, but we all did get to talk about video games, the good things and the bad things about classic games. And that was actually, this episode was exactly what I had dreamed of. So thank all of you for taking part in this. And there's still lots that we could revisit someday. So this might be one worth circling back on sometime to talk about those other two games none of us had a chance to talk about.
That still haven't played
but in this. Yes. Yeah, we can revisit and say, hey, did Resident Evil click with me? I don't know. It's been a year, but it'll be a mystery. We'll find out.
It would be funny if we come back in a year and everyone's changes taste are completely flipped. Just like,
yeah, actually, I'm like, I don't actually like Metroidvanias anymore. It's just Resident Evil for me now.
Mm. Boy, I love Ubisoft loaf. Hell yeah. Assassin's Creed Mirage. Let's go.
Give me those maps of icons to chase down.
More
I love
icons.
It. I love it.
To tidy up.
Mm. Just give me them waypoints. All right. So everyone, thank you for your time. This is a patron-supported episode, patron-exclusive episode of Retronauts, so I don't need to give you, the listener, the rundown on how Retronauts works because you're cool and awesome and you keep the show going with your support. So thank you for that. We hope you've enjoyed the episode. I think it would be great for us to have a mailbag episode where everyone writes in and talks about games that haven't clicked with them, and we can kick that topic around a little bit. But in the meantime, I will just let everyone call it a day here after they tell us where we can find them on the internet. I'm just going to go clockwise around the view that I have here. So Bob, let's start with you.
Hey, it's me, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. I also have things going on with Henry here at the Talking Simpsons Network. You can find that at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons or look up Talking Simpsons in your podcast device. We also do things like What a Cartoon. We look at a different cartoon from a different series every month. And then we look at things like King of the Hill, Futurama, Batman, the Animated Series, and more on our Patreon at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. And I will say, if you're interested in things that I am personally doing, watch this space, or perhaps my Twitter space, at the end of February of 2023. And maybe if you're listening to this later, you've already heard about it, but I have a little announcement that's coming up. So keep your eyes peeled, folks.
All right. Kat.
Yeah, I've been Kat Bailey, apologizing to Henry Gilbert and being slightly amused that Gran Turismo was the series that I got the most heated over.
Did not expect that.
Not Super Mario 64. Not Pokemon. Freaking Gran Turismo is the one that apparently
a good ending, though.
Sent me over the deep end. Crazy. Anyway, yeah.
Where can we find you online? Yeah.
Yeah, if you can find me online on Twitter at @_catbot. I'm also on IGN's Nintendo Voice Chat. IGN's my day job. And also Axe of the Blood God. That's our RPG podcast.
All right. Wow. I'm looking at your little video here. This is totally irrelevant, your video image. And I just noticed there's a really cool Koopa clown car in the background of your camera view. That's awesome. Congratulations on that great piece of art.
Thank you.
Sorry, folks at home, you can't see it, but just imagine it's amazing. Stuart, what about you? Where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me on the internet on Twitter at Stupacabra, but I genuinely don't recommend it because I tweet way too much and they're all shit. I truly don't recommend my tweets to anyone. Other than that, you can find me on Retronauts, where I'm currently reviewing every single Game Gear game, which is a thing that I didn't need to do, but here we are. And mostly Retronauts. I'm also working on a book at the moment, and I have one coming out this year called All Games Are Good, which is about how every game ever made is excellent, and you should play all of them.
I've read the text and that's not completely true, but we did get the proofs the other day and it looks great. It's going to be a chunky boy. You're going to be able to hit a person and hurt them with it.
So, and by listening to this podcast, you have technically agreed to buy it. So sorry.
Henry, what about you?
Well, yes, you can follow me on Twitter at @HENEREYG. I'm always tweeting up thoughts just like the ones I shared on this. Also, yes, please, as Bob mentioned, check out the podcast we do regularly, Talking Simpsons and What a Cartoon, in the free spaces you find podcasts. And we do so much exclusive content at patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons, including our extra special premium podcast, What a Cartoon Movie, where we go crazy in depth over 5 hours into classic animated feature films, including our longest ever 6.5 hours about Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And really, if you put it with the would-be sequels episode of that we did, we really did a 10-hour podcast on Who Framed Roger Rabbit. So please check it all out for yourself. Patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons and TalkingSimpsonsPodcast.com also is a good destination to visit.
And finally, you can find me, Jeremy Parrish, on the internet doing stuff. I work at Limited Run Games, where I publish books by authors such as Stuart Gipp and also by me. And currently, I'm about to send a book on the Sega SG-1000 off to press. And it's also going to be a chunky boy that could kill a man or a woman. We don't discriminate when it comes to murder with blunt objects. That's what literature is for. And you can also find me on YouTube as Jeremy Parrish, creating the video content that turns into books. It's all part of the great circle of life. And just imagine that my books are Baby Simba, and I'm holding them up on the cliff, and everyone is throwing them and celebrating. Yes, it's so great. Anyway, thanks everyone for listening. Thanks, Bob, Henry, Kat, and Stuart for participating. And I'd love to come back to this topic someday. So maybe that's something you can look forward to down the road. In the meantime, we're going to let you go after this lengthy podcast so that you can sleep, or at least I can sleep. Thank you.